Okay, Chabur this week is part of the learning in the shul this week, which is being sponsored by Lynn and Marvin and their family, commemorating the yahrzeits of Lynn's grandmother, Bela Freda Bas Chaim Wolf, Marvin's father, Klinimus Ben Moshe Yisrael, and Lynn's father, Avram Yoel Ben Shmuel. Lynn and Shamas should all have Aliyah. Before I get to this week's questions, I have to really go back, because sometimes you see something and you realize we're in the month of Adar. Maybe we're in the month of Adar Ibur, Adar Aleph, whatever the case is, but of course our heads are naturally going to the Megillah. So a couple of weeks ago we spent in a early Chabur, in a very heated Chabur, if I recall correctly. We dealt with the question of the Mashgiach, right? Should a Hechsher give a Hechsher to a place if you're only going to focus on the food? And we had a whole discussion about the Chok HaKashrut in the land of Israel. Everyone remember the context? So someone says to me, have you forgotten about Mordechai? Mordechai, what do you do about Mordechai? Right? What am I talking about? So the Gemara Megillah tells us, go ahead, Marv.
You're talking about the party that took place in Achashverosh.
Yeah.
And it was a mixed event. They had kosher food, but
they had all kinds of things going on. The language in the Megillah is lasos kirtzon ish bo ish, right? And the Gemara says, what does that mean, kirtzon ish bo ish? That at the party they allowed, it was to the will of each man, ish bo ish. So Gemara goes with a deeper level of interpretation. Ish bo ish meant that there were two party planners who were involved. Who were the two party planners? Mordechai and Haman. And the Ishva Ishir is a reference to Mordechai and Haman. And Rashi explains that that meant that Mordechai and Haman were the two guys who were pouring the wine at the meal. So Akash has to be asked, why was Mordechai pouring wine at the meal? Yain Esach. Right? He wanted to make sure that the Jews were drinking holy wine. Now, I know we talked about owls or whatever the place was on 22. So it says to me, certainly the party in Achashverosh's time was certainly no worse. And yet you see that Mordechai served as a mashgiach, right? He was the mashgiach. He was checking to make sure there'd be no violations of the halacha. What do you learn from this? That what? Everything you said in that last chabur is incorrect. That really, in point of fact, a mashgiach can have the ability. So what was the whole business that you were going so nuts about last time and you defended, the position of the Bat Rabbanim at that time? It doesn't sound so clear.
We were discussing if people should go as opposed to him.
Very good. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita and Rav Josh Itzkowitz with Shlita both take the same position. In his Sefer, Taima Dekura, Rav Chaim Kanievsky comes around and says the exact same thing that you just heard from Josh Itzkowitz. There is a fundamental difference between a person turning around and saying what? And saying, I give my seal of approval on this place, right? Which in essence means, come, right? To quote Josh's words. And once you see that people are going, right? Once you see that people are going, you want to make sure that you minimize the iser. Oh. So this is Rav Chaim Kanievsky's answer in time of the Kurats, Josh Gutzquiz's answer. And so therefore, Mordechai specifically told the people, don't go. He specifically said, I am not giving my, don't go to the party. Right? However, once he saw the people weren't going to listen, so he went ahead and he made certain tikkunim. So, of course, that's a great answer to solve the immediate problem, but it doesn't solve the bigger problem, which is, fine.
I saw Mordechai there.
First of all, but more importantly, beyond that,
why not do the same thing?
In modern times, look, if the people are going to go, right? If the people are going to go, we should give a hechsher also, right?
But you can't say that when you're running these ad campaigns and pulling people in.
Meaning?
It's not that people are already going. So you're going to open up a new Pesach program because everyone's already going.
No, I'm going to have a Pesach. Right?
I have a... That they'll come to me because I have better hashgacha.
Right. So, I mean, what Josh is hinting to all around the sides, he's trying to say in a nicer way, is... Yeah, but you have to be careful when you apply that type of logic, because then you're being the dreg of society is now leading the pack, right? Jewish leadership should not be running based on the lowest common denominator, right? We don't live our lives just trying to stay below but not, trying not to hit the 50th level of Tumah, right? We're supposed to be living trying to make sure we hit the 50th level of Tara. Let me give you Ad Kedei Kach. So I get this, I think I mentioned on a number of occasions, I get this monthly digest called Vavei HaAmudim. It's wonderful. It's all the monthly issues that Rav Zilberstein in Eretz Yisrael went through in the month. All the shaylos and all this. So there was Agudas Yisrael of America just had a big Yarchi Kala program, right? Where they brought a whole bunch of people. Rabbi Shapiro's father, Rabbi Shapiro, has been going for years and years and years. So in honor of the occasion, they asked Rav Zilberstein also to give Divrei Halacha. So he comes and he delivers a whole bunch of exciting topics like he does here. And they printed it up in this month's Vavei HaAmudim. And so it's like the first couple of pages. So this question comes up and he says, with all due respect, there is a comment of the Maharsham. The Maharsham appears in Or HaChaim, Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, Sif Katan Lamed. Now what is Tav Kuf Nun Aleph? What's Siman? What are we dealing with? That far ahead in Or HaChaim is certainly Yom Tov related, right? Or it's to a certain point in the year. In this case, he's talking about the 9 days. One of the things that we do during the 9 days is, or what we don't do during the 9 days is, we don't eat meat. So the Shaila came to the Maharsham. During the 9 days, we don't eat meat. Except if you had to see him, okay, whatever. We'll save that for another time. So the Shaila comes to the Maharsham. Can a community, can the Rabbanim of the community give a Hechsher to meat, to a place that's serving meat during the 9 days? Because if you don't, what's going to happen? The people are going to come in and they're going to go to McDonald's and Burger King and Arby's and Wendy's and Owls, whatever, you know, all those other places, right? So the Maharsham writes, and he says, there's two different types of averus. There's a chatas ha-kohol, there's a chatas ha-yachid. A chatas ha-kohol means that the whole tzibur is doing something wrong. And if you sign on to such a situation, you are, in essence, taking the actions of individuals and turning it into the actions of the tzibur. And so for the tzibur to go ahead and say, we're going to do this, you're inviting, like you said before, the entire tzibur to go ahead and do what? Go partake of the meat. And so therefore, the Maharsham comes out, and Maharsham was Rav Shalom Shadron's grandfather, right? So he comes back and he says, you cannot allow it. It's better to have somebody do a chatas ha-yachid than have the entire tzibur do a chatas ha-kol. So Reb Zilberstein said that in addition to the comments of his brother-in-law, Reb Chaim Kanievsky and Josh Itzkowitz, who's not his brother-in-law, but an admirer, right? So he said that's the same thing over here. We don't have a right to go ahead and give a hechsher to a place that's not appropriate. Why? Because to give a hechsher, the fact that I'm giving the hechsher to the place that's engaging in actions that are inappropriate, that's a chatas atzibur. You're inviting more people to live a life that's inappropriate and normalizing it. That's a big problem. Go ahead.
You have individuals eating tarfus, which is a kri of makos, versus a community being over on a minhag.
Again, so not to be misabel on Yerushalayim, that's fine, and I hear your question. Ad kedei kach, that's the chiddush of the Maharsham. I'm with you, but in our shaila, you're being over on a lot more, right?
Okay.
In our shaila, in our case, I'm just saying. In defense of the Maharsham, it's a minhag, but minhag atzibur does take on a status of a nether in many instances. Right, so if I decide this year I don't feel like I'm gonna eat meat during the 9 days during Shavuot Shachalbo, right? I have to take care of everyone in the room, right? I'm gonna eat meat during Shavuot Shachalbo, right? With no heter of a siyum or a bris or anything like that. I'm gonna eat meat, right? So what happens? We have a very big problem with that. It's a minhag. No, it's a minhag Yisrael. You have to be careful. Minhag Yisrael Torah. You have to take that very seriously. As a pikuach nefesh, would I? It's a different story, Yossi, but that we don't live our life in the Bikuach Nefesh situation. And so I think we can agree to that. So that was the first note, and I before I even open up to, yeah?
Just one question. In the situation of the party at the palace,
uh-huh.
Did the Jews have a right to say no to Achashverosh?
That's what Mordechai wanted them to do. Of course they had a right. They would have been the only ones who didn't go. We're the only ones who didn't go. Everybody wants to stick out like a sore thumb. But sometimes we have a responsibility. You have to understand, even when we don't think we stick out, inevitably, a Jew stands out. We're Latov, and sometimes Lara. So we have a responsibility. As much as we think that we don't want to, we don't want to stick out, we don't want to draw attention.
So there was no threat of...
There's no requirement. It's an invitation. You must go to a party. No, there was no requirement to go to the party. Okay. That's why they got punished from nation. And then we sued us also Russia. Mm-hmm. Right? And they certainly didn't have to have the Hanoi. Okay, let's get to this week's questions. Like I said, sometimes I prepare the questions in advance and I think to myself, wow, these are good questions, you know, because they were different trials that came up. And sometimes I think to myself, okay, this will be like a backup one in case of emergency. And then within 24 hours, if it surfaces again in a different context. This was one of those weeks where that happened. I won't tell you which of the three it was. Although all three were questions that have come up in the community. Right? My wife receives many tzedakah requests from many different organizations. Is she obligated to give tzedakah independent of my obligation? Can a tzedakah target women specifically? Can a girls' seminary, for instance, target its alumni for fundraisers or a mikvah? And by the way, the mikvah Malav Malka. By the way, the mikvah Malav Malka is Matzei Shabbos for funds specifically from the women of a community. Is there any problem with that? Yes, no, maybe so. That's question number one. Question number two, and this comes courtesy of the back table at Shal Shudas, right? There is a bear and deer hunt in the community on weekends in public parks. The purpose, they say, is wildlife population control. I was thinking that it would be a great and different way to plan a men's club event. If we'd all just get there, put on the black and the red coats, take out a couple of suitcases of beer and some shotguns. So a couple guys wear the spandex with the tail in the back. And we have a good time. I know we won't be able to eat the things we shoot, but can we participate in the bear and deer hunt under these circumstances? That's question number two. And finally, a certain person seems not to be knowledgeable in Jewish matters, even in kashrus. In order to make a few dollars, the person has been selling cheese commercially from his own online without any hechsher, which he readily admits, so it's not a question of him being a chaperon. I do not purchase food from him because of it. At the Purim night breakfast, my neighbor, who's been hosting for years, tells me that this year's cheese platter includes many different cheeses that she was able to get cheap from that online business. Can I rely on him and eat? Or is it a problem and I can't even continue to eat the cheese? Okay, so we have women and the fundraisers. We have the hunt, men's club hunt. And the third question over here is the one about the cheese. Who cut the cheese? Right?
Hunting, we will go.
I like number three.
You want three? I wonder how that is. The third one I think is faster than the second, but well, I guess we'll go in those directions. We'll start with number three. We'll move backwards. So actually, number three is from my mother. My mother lives in Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim Kodesh. And she likes to go into different stores. There's one store in particular she goes to all the time, because the guy changes money, right? And she likes the rate, everything's fine, and she feels very comfortable with him, right? He's licensed, yeah. He also sells chopped liver, right? Someone in the house, I don't know who, but somebody likes chopped liver, which we've discussed on other occasions, right? And just in case you're listening, I'm not that person. Yeah, sometimes my mother listens, right? So she tells me proudly a couple of months ago that she couldn't understand it, the guy selling chopped liver in the store with no hechsher. So the guy says, oh, you're American, you may want to try my chopped liver. So she says, oh, wow, yeah, sure. Maybe I'll buy it for Shabbos. Who's the hechsher? He says, no, we make it at home. So my mother says to him, but who's the hechsher? He says, what are you talking about? Everybody buys from me. She says, but who's your hechsher? So she says, I'm the hechsher. So my mother says, listen, I like you. I'm going to keep coming to visit the store. But what kind of business is this? I'm not buying something. So, of course, she calls every single one of her children, and I happen to be the last one who gets the phone call, right? And she says, see, I made a big deal about it, right? So she says, have you ever heard of such a thing? The answer is, yes, I've heard of such a thing before. There, you know, and believe it or not, the issue is a machlokas haposkim. And it's based around the Gemara that I think we have learned previously. There is a Gemara, there's a Masechta called Avodah Zarah. There is a Gemara in the Masechta Avodah Zarah on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, where the Gemara says that a person cannot buy Yemach Yud Mem Ches Mechag Mem Ches Gimel, and that stands for Yud stands for Yayin, Mem says for Marias or fish brine, right? The Ches is for Chalav. Right, mechag. The mem is melach saldarkonis. It's a special type of salt that was very sharp. Ches is chiltus, which is a certain type of pickled herb. Right, and gimel is gvina, is cheese. There's your cheese for the shayla. Right, and you can't buy these things in Syria unless you're buying from a mumche. Why? The Gemara says we have to be worried about the kashrus in Syria. But here's the kicker. The Gemara says, well, you can't buy it from a person unless he's a mumche. If you happen to be visiting Syria, and you get invited to somebody's home, so long as you can trust the person's home, you can eat the food in the home. But if the guy himself in the same home owns a store, then the rules are not the same. And Rashi says, let me explain something to you. There are two issues at play. One is kashrus, the other is lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol, that you can't place a stumbling block in front of a blind person. So, you know, people aren't so particular. Let's say you're not in Syria. Let's say you're in Muncie, right? You yourself happen to be you know somebody in the neighborhood who happens to be a personally very scrupulous individual about his own personal kashrus. But lo and behold, surprise, when it came to selling chickens to everybody else in the community, he was very into a very interesting character, Frank Perdue, right? Because he was selling everyone Perdue oven stuffer roasters, right? So a person needs to know in such a situation that this is a separate situation. You could eat in that guy's house, but you couldn't eat in anybody else's house. Right? Why? Everybody else was getting the chickens from this guy. That guy, if he, you know, he was a Syrian. Right?
He didn't pay his house either, because he has no nemonos.
Right. So that, but his wife has nemonos. She was the mashkifa in the house. Right? So Rashi says over there, they were just, their concern in Syria was the fact that the people didn't care about Lifnei Iver. Right? Lifnei Iver, they would sell you stuff from a goy, which is why these six items are depicted. Anything that has a potential problem of intermingling with a guy is something that you have to be concerned, even if the Jew himself is not using it himself. So therefore, Rashi says, in his own house, he's makbid. Yeah, we don't have to be concerned when you're eating with him. But outside of his house, he is makbid. So outside of his house, he's not so makbid on Lifnei Iver, and he'll trick you. Because for a buck, he'll do things. But in his house, he's not going to do the Isser himself. You can eat in his house. And the Ran explains that taking something from a mumche means buying from someone who has a cheskas kashrus, which means somebody who's not, right? As long as the person has the cheskas kashrus, then that's called buying from a mumche, whether or not the person has an official hechsher, right? And that's the Ran's understanding. The Rambam vehemently disagrees. The Rambam is in Hilchos Machalos Asuros, Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Chafei. The Rambam says, if a person is not chashed, that is to say, you have no reason to assume that this guy is going to trick you. If anything, you can assume that the guy is okay. You still can't buy meat or wine or fish that has no simanim unless they have a hechsher. Right? That is to say, we are makbid on that situation. No, he goes a step further. He uses the basis of meat and wine, and you should just know the Rambam on the page does not leave without having an immediate jump up complaint from the Ravid, who supports the position of the Ran. If a person has a cheskas kashrus, why can't you trust him in terms of purchase? So we see that there's a machlokas harishonim here. Rashi and the Ran and the Ravid are all of the opinion that unless a person is chashad, he himself stands in place of that shir, which is a comment I hear all the time. The Rambam Dingzach, he says that's true for eating in his house. But once you get involved in commercial, because of the additional level of lifnei iver lo sitei mechshol, and unfortunately, that is a concern. Let me finish, right? So therefore, the Rambam says you cannot buy unless you get into, unless you make sure that you purchase from somebody who is reliable. Go ahead.
Why do we apply that issue of Surya to everywhere? We're talking about Syria. These people were known to be.
The Rambam applies it to places where people tend to be. You know, I guess people will be swayed in another direction, right? People will be swayed. These items tend to be a little bit more expensive.
Are the restrictions limited to purchase? I can't eat in this house, and I can't buy from him in the store. But if I go into the store and he says, "Have some chocolate."
So I told my mother about this machlokas harishonim. And so she says to me, oh, she asked me your question. So if he would have served me a free sample, right? Or let's say he would have...
That's the biggest thing.
So I think that that's a problem. I think in a commercial environment, that's a concern.
Go to Costco, they
right?
Get a free sample because they want you to buy it.
Right. Right. Or let's say somebody is having a market display, or he makes a chesvas, a raffle or whatever, and he's going to donate to make sure that it's available for everybody. That I think falls in the intent is for a commercial purpose, and that presents lines up on this line of the machlokas over here. So how do we pass in la'alacha? So in Yerideya Simon Kuf Yutes Sif Aleph, the Mechaber says that he says the only time you have to be concerned is when one is chashad, which most Jews aren't. And so the Mechaber says, I go with, it's ironic, it's one of those times, excuse me, generally, the style of the Rambam, the style of the Mechaber is, if the Rambam says something, usually you'll see the Beis Yosef, the Mechaber, go in that direction. Here he doesn't. But you know who does? The Rambam. The Rambam jumps up right away, who says, unless a person has a Hechsher, you should not purchase things from such a person, but you can eat in the person's home, obviously. So he sort of subdivides the position of the Rambam. You can trust the guy in his home. And the Vilna Gaon points out, as we pointed out in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, he says, obviously the Shulchan Aruch holds like Rashi and those that we cited before, and the Rambam is siding with the Rambam here. Now the Aruch HaShulchan, on location, right there in Siman Kuf, Yotes, Sif Dalet says, the reason why we distrust the shop owner is that shop owners sometimes take liberties, right? They're more heter, right? They'll take certain leniencies on their own. And so therefore, and we know this is the case. Why? Because the Gemara Bava Basra, for instance, on that Pei Tes Amud Aleph, comes along and tells us that when it comes to weights and measures, we have a responsibility as a community to have people who are assigned to go in and assess the proper weight in each of the scales in each of the stores. Why? Because while nobody would dream of having a store, right? If you go over to any guy who gets nailed for bad weights, they don't think that they're doing anything wrong. Are you kidding me? I never steal. But in the store, the other guy usually leans his finger on it and whatever. It doesn't work always in the even side. He eats three grapes when he puts the rest of the grapes on the table. So storekeepers tend to be, when it comes to their own business, we already have a style where we tend to be more makfid as a community when we start dealing one step above. So he says, unless a person is musaf b'kashrus. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan's level of being musaf b'kashrus is not exactly what we call the most difficult in the world. He says, you want to know what a musaf b'kashrus is? What's the grand level where you don't have to worry? He says, does the person put on talis and tefillin every single day? Does he daven three times a day? Does he wash his hands before he eats bread? And does he teach and encourage kashrus education in his home? Even if he doesn't know it all, he's not a bucky in Yerideya, Such a person, he asked Shilas, the way Rabbi Hochberg in Jamaica States taught me, is that he said, my trick in these things is I see the people ask me Shilas, right? Then I know that they are muzak and bekashas. Why? It's the Aruch HaShulchan, it's beferish. The Chachmas Adam, the Chaye Adam in Chlal, Ayin Aleph, Sif Aleph says, a person should not buy from anyone without a hechsher. And the Daki Tshuva, which is one of these like super duper commentaries on Yoredeya, he quotes the Taz, who explains the reason. He says, already since the time of the Ramah, down to my time, we're not talking about a long period of time, he says, people are not so educated and cautious anymore, and they're not so careful about being scrupulous in money issues. So he says, you know, already in my time, the Taz says, we are careful not to buy things commercially unless the people have a hechsher. And so if that's the case, right, it follows that under commercial circumstances, a person should not engage in commercial commerce unless it's from a situation where there is a legitimate hechsher. Now let's go back to our original question. So we began with a situation where we've answered the question, l'chadchila, right? Should you buy that platter of cheese for your Purim night meal, which, by the way, is not a Purim Suda, because the Purim Suda should be? It should be fleishik, and it should be during the day, after one has heard the Megillah, right? You know, usually towards the evening time. We're talking about the breakfast, which is allowed to be dairy, even if it's hosted by Scott Susser, whose name rhymes with Butler, right? He can still go ahead and have a cheese platter. Just don't tell Scott I said it, and yes, you won't tell him that it's on tape, right? But the bottom line is that if in our case, though, the one asking the Shaila is the person who's sitting at the table, and he's at his hostess' house. Now, technically speaking, the hostess, had she served the cheese, could I eat the cheese? Based on what we're saying, the source of the cheese is a person who is, on a personal level, I didn't in his home, right? So now, the hostess, who's my neighbor, whose home I also trust, I can eat in her home too. The only thing is,
she bought it commercially,
and she told me. What do I do?
Not a question of the monos anymore.
Why?
She's in line until she says, I bought this cheeseburger at McDonald's. You know, it's like, she told you she got the food in a way that you're not allowed to get it. So
even though, in all likelihood, the food is okay, Yossi Pinsker is positing that in this situation, it's not a question of the fact that the cheese may or may not be kosher. There's no conversation about the status of the cheese. There's a question about the fact that Chazal instituted a policy, this goes all the way back, to make sure that when we deal with the realm of kashrus, that for commercial reasons, which actually ironically are more choshen mishpat based than straight up kashrus only based, right? Because we're worried about certain liberties that people take. It's more lifnei iver. Because a person's desire to make money, right, so to speak, still Yossi says, don't eat the cheese. You should stop eating the cheese. Does everyone agree with him or not? Yes? Yes?
She bought it commercially
without a hechsher from a guy that is in the neighborhood. You know him. You see him. You went to his house for cholent last Shabbos, right? Huh? Not at the same time. He didn't serve the cheese at the same time. Right? So, and everyone agrees? Yes?
Again, assuming that this is a guy that you wouldn't buy from directly, right?
I would buy from it. I would buy the cheese from him directly online, but if I went into his house,
you said you'd eat in his house, but you wouldn't buy the cheese from him.
We're not allowed to buy the cheese from him online because he doesn't have a hatchet.
Correct. So that's not assuming that you wouldn't buy from it directly, now just because it came through your neighbor, we would usually eat in our house.
So Rav Zilberstein happens to agree with all of you. Shilas brought to Rav Zilberstein, I don't understand. Unless the local rabbinate comes along, right, and says, right, that it's okay, I know we don't have the letter, but it's okay. So that actually was the story with my mother, right? So my mother, and going back to the liver story, so my mother was so upset about this, after she went to all six of her kids to tell them the story, right, after all of that, she also went to speak to her Rav, who is a very well-known, prominent Rav, Rabbi Beryl Wein. And Rabbi Wein says, oh, you went to so-and-so? Yeah, the chopped liver there is awesome. Right? So my mother says, ah! He says, no, I'm telling you, the chopped liver is top of the line. It's fine. The guy's okay. Why doesn't he have a hechsher? It's a good question. But everyone in the neighborhood, my parents live in Wolfson, it's attached to the store somewhere in Rehavia, right? So under those circumstances, the Darki Tshuva says, if the Rabbanah says you can rely on it without a hechsher, you can rely on it without a hechsher. P.S., the next week, the guy had a hechsher up in the store. My mother says, victory! Victory! I said it's victory also. Folks, if we start a slippery slope in the realm of kashrus, right, all of a sudden, the hisrashlis opportunities are vast. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen sometimes, that political issues intervene. We've had certainly kashrus scandals. And I'm not saying that our system is perfect. But I am telling you that if we start allowing everyone to buy everything without a hesher, och and vey to us. So I happened to speak to Maran this week on a shaila very similar to this, and Rabbi Tice wrote back to me, that's why our policy in the community is no home-baked goods in the public sphere. He added rather humorously, he says, this applies to all our schools, it applies to our shuls, it applies to our mikvah, it applies to... And he says, the only place I don't think I've had too much protest is in the cemetery, right? But he says, if you can get the members over there to discuss the issue, I'm sure that we would probably pass it as a rule there as well. Home bake, or as a commercial, becomes fundamentally difficult. This is the psak that Rav Zilberstein, Rav Teitz have pointed out. I don't think it's a very surprising psak, because, like I said, it goes all the way back, certainly on the Ashkenazic line, but even based on the comments of the Taz, it makes sense that it probably should go that way on the Sephardic line as well. Because, like I said, how many people are that knowledgeable to go ahead and know what to do? Yeah.
What about where you change the situation a little bit? So where you force them that much. For instance, if the person sells the homemade product out of their home, then, because they have enough money to keep their house kosher, then the issue of the Iver can't trump that. No. So if they're selling the product out of their home, not in their store...
Once upon a time, I don't agree with you. Go ahead.
It's all about the money.
No. Right. But we differentiate. In Surya, where we go back to the origins of Daikana, right? The origins of Daikana said that in Surya, you can't buy these things...
Because the people are kosher on the table.
But you can eat in those people's homes.
Yes.
Therefore, if you're buying it from the person's home... They're keeping their
No. First of all, the product that they're selling you may not be kosher. They may keep the home kosher, but let's say, look, I could easily bake non-kosher meat in my ovens.
How?
Right? I bake non-kosher meat in my oven and then kosher it.
You could eat in their house because they have no incentive to serve you trade.
No, that's not why. No.
Once
it's a business, whether you buy it online or in a retail brick-and-mortar store or from their house, now it's a business. Now you have to worry.
It's the other way around, though. You're assuming that the only reason why they're nailing their house is because they have no incentive to cheat you. No. But the only reason why they're not nemun out of their house is because they do have an incentive to cheat you. The status is nemunus, and it's changed because of what
No, that's incorrect. I think you're missing. I think there are two intertwined issues over here. Issue number one is if he's sitting next to you and eating it, he's not going to run the risk for himself, right? So you can eat the cheese next to him. Because he's munching on the cheese and you're munching on the cheese, and to stick it to you, he's not going to eat the cheese himself, right?
Right.
What he will do is sell you the cheese to make a quick couple of bucks, right? That he will do.
But if you see the in his oven,
what?
And he's taking the challah out of his oven to
let's
sell
say let's
you.
Let's talk about briskets for a second, or
he's
chopped liver,
out of his oven.
Right?
You
can see him grilling the livers over his range, but if he then takes out a different pot, what's the big deal? He's got these terrible livers. He can't do anything with. So he's going to. He's got to get them off his property. They're trafus. They're living.
His whole oven is
going to
be trafus.
Yeah, I talked to the guys. Koshering an oven is not the. How many times have you gone away on vacation?
Yeah.
You know, and had an oven. And what's the first thing that everyone does? Yeah. You check into to the suite or the B&B. What's the first thing you do? Right? Before you unpack the stuff, what do? Run the self-clean. Right? You call, right? The rabbi, if you remember to ask the rabbi, first thing you did, right? No? You've gone away, you've done this before, rented a place for a vacation somewhere, right? The oven's not kosher.
But roasting on a range or a grill top is much different. It's much harder than kosher.
You're starting to, you want to split between every single sub-item that people sell? I don't think al pi halacha we do that. And so therefore the answer is that the poskim wouldn't do it. But to be honest, I think the fact that the person does it out of the house, I think people would run certain risks out of their house. I think that's one of the reasons why most of the major hashirim don't let people run businesses out of their house in order to get their hashir. I think that there's too much risk involved in that situation. There also happens to be shmir issues, but those things can be overcome. I know Starkey, for instance, they were very particular. Someone in the neighborhood was trying to get a Starkey hashir for something, and the Starkey, you know, said if you weren't in a separate, you know, if your business didn't have a separate entity, you know, we wouldn't even consider giving you the hashir. Who told you to have a separate entity? Answer, Vada Rabbanim of Greater Elizabeth. And so therefore, support your local Vad, because we think like the Star K sometimes. Okay. Marvin asked us, any questions on this particular Shaila? Okay, so my mother wins, and the liver guy wins, and I win because liver's not being served in my house, right? Those are those old days of... of Chol Moed liver aren't happening anymore.
Liver's okay. Not so great. Chopped liver.
The chopped liver is not so bad, yeah.
Actually, I do have one question. Sorry. Rabbi Wine, for example, right? When he said, everyone knows if he's okay.
I don't think what Rabbi Wine meant was everyone knows. I think he checked it out. The sense I got from my mother was he checked it out.
It's not like it's black or white, that once you start watering it down, you run the risk. So you either have Ashkoch or you don't. Even if Rob says, I know him, he's a good man, he came to his house.
Right. So I think, like I said, I got the sense that he knew the guy had a hechsher, right? Which was, like my mother said to me the next week, she went in there, the guy had a letter in the store, right? So maybe what Rabbi Wein said, you know, was, I don't know the source, it happens sometimes, you run up to the rabbi, and you start screaming at him, and you want an answer right away, not that my mother screams at the rabbi, Chalila, that's not her style, right? But she says, well, what's up with that? Like, is there a problem with that? Rabbi Wein doesn't know the story, right? So, but I know the guy, and I know the situation, you know? So that may be what happened over here. It's like my mother always says, I got him to put the sign up in the store, right? By the next week, and he made it a point when she came in to change money. He says, Hageveret, right? Hageveret, right? So, you know, Tistakli, take a look. I have a Teuda. And it was there. Okay, there's a bear and deer hunt in the community on weekends in public parks. Right? The purpose is wildlife population control. I think I almost hit a deer four times this week. Right? They were all standing in front of Mrs. Fox's house. Right? It's dark on the corner. You turn, and then you all of a sudden see those glowing eyes. And you got to be careful. They're all over the neighborhood. So I guess apparently they've been very careful about this in Union County. And January and February, they have weekend hunts. If you drive around, right, you see, you know, when you come, what's that, Conan, right?
There's can't use a shotgun.
Until the 15th.
Huh?
You can't use a shotgun, though.
What?
Only a crossbow.
Oh, only a crossbow. Oh, okay. Well, that takes away half the fun, right? A bunch of junk guys drinking beer holding crossbows is not nearly as much fun.
It depends on the time of year.
Right?
There's different times where you...
No. In residential areas, there are only plenty
of... Is that because the injury with the crossbow is...
Because New Jersey is so...
And they can only shoot downward. They have to be in a tree hide, and they have to shoot...
Oh! See? You see the things that you learn. But
they can only shoot... They can't shoot...
And how do you get the beer up to the tree? Because that's a very important part of the process. Okay, so men's club event, back table guys, right? Can we participate in such an event or not? Yes or no? What do people say? And just remember, question 1B will be why or why not?
He wasn't drinking.
Huh? Dick Cheney, was there somebody make a reference?
No, he was like, was he drinking? I said, so he wasn't.
Oh, because Dick Cheney is obviously the thought that goes off in everyone's head. Remember, Dick Cheney shot somebody.
Never apologized.
Huh?
If it's not a definite kill.
So it's Tzar Bali Chai. Maybe any other issues to think about?
Toeles for what you're doing.
What difference does that make?
And if you're taking the deer and you're donating it to a food pantry or a soup kitchen, and they
so what does that do for you?
So other people can do it.
It does for that you're helping people out. It's no different than shepherding a cow.
Okay. Is it no different than shepherding a cow?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So far, everyone seems to be thinking about Tzar Bali Chaim. Anything else?
It's a bad nido to go around.
Oh, nidos? Anything else? So Rav Shechter used to always tell us that certain types of Gedolei HaPoskim you always have to think about. When they speak, they put things, they were super geniuses, and they highlighted all these great, huge, colossal issues, and they boiled them down into like simple, logical situations. One of the opinions that he always liked to quote to us and told us to pay very close attention in between when they talk about things, one was Rabbi Cheska Landau, the No Debi Yehuda. Shaus Chuvis No Debi Yehuda. When the No Debi Yehuda speaks, you have to remember to pay very close attention. When he lines things up, he says things very short and swift. But you know, if you take it apart, you realize that the man speaks genius. There are not so many extremely well-known tshuvas of the No Debi Yehuda that aren't, because most of the Sefer deals with difficulties of agunos, women who lost, whose husbands disappeared, and we didn't know what to do, and he's matir hundreds and hundreds of agunos. But in one of the most famous, well-known tshuvas of the No Debi Yehuda, which is the No Debi Yehuda Madura Tinyana Yerodea Yud, he actually asks the question about hunting. And he subdivides it into six sub-issues. And the first one he takes up is Yuri's issue about Tzar Bali Chaim. So in order for us to understand the issues concerning Tzar Bali Chaim, Yuri says, hunting, if there's no, and Marvin has toeles, no toeles, Yossi starts adding in, maybe he'll donate it to the Hillside Food Bank. I'm not so sure that any deer or bear that's drinking, first of all, I don't know, bear burgers, I don't know how good they are. Right, but if they're drinking,
Definitely deer is salt.
It depends where the deer are from.
You can use it for
cloth. But you have to remember, it may all quite likely, if it's drinking the waters here in Union County, might not necessarily be the healthiest of. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, okay, for the second time, all the Masechtos in Shas, the second time tonight, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, the Gemara tells the story that you are allowed to be oker the hoof of the horse. Remember the hoof of the horse that the king rides on? Why? Because it's done l'chabit es hamelach. Things that are done for the covet of the king, right? It's not called Tzar Bali Chaim. I think severing a tendon of a horse is pretty serious tzar for the horse. But Tosfos Bava Metzia, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis says that when there is a tzorech, when there is a need, that the argument of Tzar Bali Chaim goes flying out the window. And therefore the Ramah, remember last week we asked the question, where are certain halachas found? Where would you expect to find the halachas of Tzar Bali Chaim? Evan HaEzer. Evan HaEzer, Simon Hay. Don't ask me why, I have no idea. Right? But the Evan HaEzer, Simon Hay says that Tzar Bali Chaim doesn't apply in the case, in any case where there is a human tzorech, whether it's health or otherwise. So the No Debi Yehuda says that hunting serves a purpose. What's the purpose? Recreation. As weak as that is, it's still a purpose. Therefore, it doesn't apply. The rules of Tzar Bali Chaim doesn't apply. Right? So that's point number one. Point number two, Tzar Bali Chaim means what? But killing an animal is not Tzar Bali Chaim. It's just the infliction of the pain. This is a hunting. It's not an issue. Now, Pachad Yitzchak, not Rav Hutner, it's Pachad Yitzchak.
If it's a sure kill,
how many
people are accurate enough to go get a kill shot ahead of the heart?
And within a split second, you jump down, shoot the thing in its eyes, and you're done. right? Unless you're Dick Cheney, in which case you might miss, right? So you should just know Pachad Yitzchak in Seida and the aforementioned Darkei Tshuva in Yerideya Simon Kuf Yud Zayin Sivkat Mendala, they vehemently disagree. And if you want a further analysis of others who disagree on this particular point, that Tzar Bali Chaim doesn't apply, Rabbi J. David Black, my Rebbe, in the Yad Yadin Kol, in his third volume of Contemporary Halachic Problems, on page 215, especially footnote number 30, lists a whole bunch of Achronim who very strongly disagree with the Noda Biyuda on this point. Then the Noda Biyuda comes back and he says there's a second question about Tashkas, because you can't eat it. Why? Because unless you shecht it, it can't be eaten. You can't eat it, right? So doing the hunt, what's the point? You hear? It's a good question, right? Yiddy, what do you say to that? You say you come back to your own point. Same, what?
Sell to the guy.
Yeah, so when you talk about Baltashkas, what's Baltashkas? What's Baltashkas? What's the definition of Baltashkas? The mower comes up, don't do Baltashkas. Right? If you take the lunch and you throw it in the garbage, that's Baltashkas. Why? Because Baltashkas means to be wasteful. The classic example of Baltashkas appears in Parshas Ki Tzetzeh. The Torah tells us if you have a fruit tree and you want to create a battering ram to smash open the gate of a city, don't cut down the fruit tree. Because why? Hashem made fruit trees for what purpose? To grow fruit, not to be battering rams. That's why he made cedar trees. Right? So Baltashkas, maybe you'd say the same thing applies over here, right? So the Gemara says, the Nevi'im quotes that same Tosfos in Bamidbar and says you can't apply that. Why? Because once you have a Tzorech, again, same argument, right? Once there's a Tzorech, it's not Baltashkas anymore. And he uses an example from the Mishnayos and Midos, right? The Mishnayos and Midos have nothing to do with having good Midos. They're actually, Rosh Hashanah used to tell us, Parshas Truma learned Masechta Midos. Because Midos is about measurements. And what's in Masechta Midos?
Measurements
of the Beis HaMikdash. Also, some of the rules in the Beis HaMikdash are described. So in the second Mishnah of Masechta Midos, the Mishnayos describe how there were different Shomrim who used to stand guard all night long in the Beis HaMikdash. And what would happen if a guy fell asleep on the job?
They'd whack him.
No. They would do more than that. Right? The Kohen, who was in charge, had a right to burn his clothing while he was sleeping. Remember that? Right? Why is that not a problem of Baltashkas? If somebody were to burn up my suit, well, that's not really Baltashkas. I know certain people in my home would be thankful. But let's say you're a fancy coat, right? The one that, that's a coat. Or your sweatshirt. That's fancy stuff. Right? So if you say, can we just use this for kindling on beer chametz? Right? No, that's Baltashkas. Says the Tiferes Yisrael, right there in Midos. He says, what are you talking about? It's a Tzorech over here. What's the Tzorech? Burning a guy's clothing? Yeah. What's the Tzorech?
Get him to wake up and not to do it
again. Not only him, right? But everyone around him knows you don't fall asleep on the job. Right? So the Noda Biyuda comes back and he says recreational hunting is not Baltashkas because doing something that doesn't cause a loss to anyone is not a violation of Baltashkas. Listen to that. There's a Tzorech. It doesn't come at a cost to anybody else. And so therefore, right, not a problem. Then he entertains a third possibility. How many Jewish hunters do we know? How many hunters in the Torah do you know? Anyone know a hunter? Name one hunter you know in the Torah. Any hunter.
Esav.
Nimrod. Those are the classic two. Right? Esav and Nimrod. Which means that like, as far as professions for Jews, right? It's not high on our list. Maybe we can apply a principle that appears in the Gemara Pesachim, Daf Nun Amud Beis, which is very relevant to this community. And what's that? Devarim hamutarim v'achirim na'agu b'hem iser. When you have a minhag hamakom, right? Or a minhag among Klal Yisrael, nobody does something. So the Gemara says, in such a situation, once it becomes acceptable to be machmer on something, you're not allowed to just decide all of a sudden willy nilly. But we're going to decide it's mutter. You don't have a right to do it. It's called devar masur machirim nagu by mitter. I'm sorry, devar ma mutar machirim nagu by miser. So if that's the case, maybe the minhag is that Jews don't hunt.
So, but the Jews did it too.
They'll hunt kosher food,
right? Kosher
fish.
Right. So the Noda Biyuda says, right? First of all, he goes further back. He goes, hunting for recreational purposes, he says, no offense, but hunting for recreational purposes, nobody does. Except if you happen to be a very wealthy person and you have recreational time. Remember when the Nodibutus is living, right? Turn of not the last millennium, but the one before it, right? Actually, the one before that, right? So you can't have a minhag be established based on something that's so uncommon anyway, right? We have the similar concept when it comes to women shochtim. The Rambam writes at the very beginning of Yeridaya, he says, women don't shecht. Why? Shekfar nagu shalo lishchot. They have a minhag not to shecht. So some of the farshim come back and say, wait a second, lo ra'inu ein oraya. The fact that we haven't seen a shochetet doesn't mean that that women don't shecht. By the way, there are other reasons why women don't shecht. It has to do with dexterity, and by the way, dexterity in terms of the swiftness that's necessary for shechita is nothing to do with that women can't, right? Except if you hold like the first way, right? But the argument of the shach on location of lo ra'inu ein oraya certainly comes into play over here as well. We can't say the fact that we haven't seen Jewish hunters means that it's usher. The Nodibu is kind of upset about that. However, he does come back and use the same argument that Yossi used, that we only have Nimrod and Esav, and he says it's unbecoming for a Jew, right? A Jew doesn't kill for pleasure. A Jew kills for sustenance. Right? So just parenthetically, a similar comment, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal once commented that hunting is characteristic of Nimrod and Esav because you're engaging in quick danger in order to get food quickly, as opposed to agriculture and farming, right? Where you work at things and you cultivate things, right? If you're a farmer, see, you can also get meat, but how are you getting your meat? You have lambs and livestock, ovines and bovines, and you're raising them, and you put your effort in, and it's the effort that you're putting in, and so it doesn't come chap chap, and so we understand a Jew, you know, should not engage in hunting. According to Ravar, maybe not even professionally, but the Nodib Yehuda doesn't go that far. The Nodib Yehuda adds another context. He said, is a person allowed to put himself into a sakana? Now, I have to tell you, with deference, this shayla comes up a lot, hopefully not with you guys, but with Achinu Shebi Yisrael, what he called the United Hatzalah guys, where very often they get called to scenes to go ahead and handle issues that are not necessarily the most secure, right? So the shayla comes up, and it's a shayla of Zawishin just happened to deal with this last year in one of his doctor shiurim that he gives once a month. So the shayla comes up. I'm a guy on United Hatzalah, right? I get called out to a scene after a pigua. Now, one of the first rules of a pigua is that if one guy blows himself up, often there's somebody in the area who's waiting to go for extra kill. So if they haven't found the second guy, or they don't know if there is a second guy, can I go out to the scene to tend to the wounded? Right? Can I? That's just Mikamcha Yisrael, that such a shayla is asked in that lashon. Right? So the Nodib Yehuda points out, he says, look, we do have an idea called V'nishmartem Lod L'Nafsho Seichem, Ramban in Bereishis Perek Chafhei Pasuk Lamed Beis notes that a person is not allowed to just put himself into a sakana for no reason, right? So based on this, the Nodib Yehuda writes that a person is not allowed to hunt for no reason, because to do so is to create a situation of sakana. You're going on a bear hunt, right? And maybe it's a little bit different in the in the back of Conan Park, right? But if you know where you're chasing after the deer, but you know if you're going after, you know, one of these situations to just put yourself into a sakana, right, with no reason whatsoever, there a person doesn't have a right. A person is doing it for atzalas nefashos, or even as a profession, If a person has a professional job, right, then in such a situation, a person does now all of a sudden have a heter to go ahead and go into a situation of sakana. Moshe Feinstein has a fascinating tshuva in Chosh Mishpat Chelak Aleph Simen Kuf Dalid, where he was asked about what he calls Beis Aleph Lamed. Can a person make a living playing Baal? What is Baal? Last weekend, a lot of people watched a certain game where the MVP, Julian Edelman, okay, he's not a Yid, but I thought he said his father, but not his mother. Right? Look, Matobu Manoim, but can Julian, look, you know, everyone's running around, they're ready to give him smicha last time I checked in certain institutions, right? Tavala Bracha, he's got the beard already. And the pious, I'd like to point out, he had pious, no? A pious individual. Is he allowed to play football? Right? It's a sakana in playing football. If you don't believe me, what's the name of the guy who had to leave the game with that big king on his arm? It was a defense.
And all the concussions.
All the concussions. Maybe guys are not allowed to play. We used to have teachers who used to tell us. You know, you can't go do this, you can't do that, you can't jump out of planes, you can't go play sit, you can't even go skiing. So I remember Rabbi Moshe Lieber was my 10th grade Rebbe, right? So we used to drive him crazy, Rebbe, take us skiing, or the only share, we'd take us skiing. And he looked at us and he goes, Rabbi Sai, I can't take you skiing. I think I told you the story. I definitely told you the story. So, Rebbe, why can't you take us skiing? He says, because if I take you skiing, I'm definitely, it's a sakana. So, Rebbe, we're not going to get hurt. We're going to go on bunny slopes. What do you get? It's not a sakana for you. It's a sakana for me. I'm going to go skiing. I'm going to fall down. And with my luck, I'm going to break my leg. And I'm going to have to tell everyone that I fell down the stairs. Right? And so that the other Rebbes won't laugh at me for taking my guy skiing and giving me musa. In the 11th grade, we had Rabbi Yeshua Kalish as our Rebbe. Rabbi Kalish is a very athletic individual. And one of the things that he likes to do is, at least he liked to in the old days, for sport, he would go skiing. So every year he would take the guys in his chair during what was then called winter break, which was one day, a Sunday, right? And we'd go skiing with the Rebbe, which meant we got up early. We learned before davening because it was too early to daven. We davened, then we went up to the mountains to go skiing with the Rebbe. And we would go on bunny slopes, and Rabbi Kalish would come down the triple black diamond and go like this. Yeah. I don't think that's pshat and tesis, right? So anyway, we asked him on the way back, Rebbe, aren't you worried that you're going to fall and break your neck or break your leg? He says, what do you mean worried about falling and breaking my leg? I could always easily, just as easily fall down and fall down the stairs in my house. That's something I'd be embarrassed about. At least if I break my leg skiing, I could turn to the other Rebbes and say, I'm with it, I'm hip. Just very funny. We all, you know, the contrast between the two Rebbeim who sat next to each other in the base medrash, very stark. But Rabbi Kalish's cousin, Rav Mordechai Willig, who's also not afraid to play sports, he told us, though, certain sports he never allowed, right? His kids were not allowed to play. Our kids play hockey, right? Shui is we're blessed. We have one of our MVPs of our middle school hockey team here, right? And my son plays on the team also. I remember Rabbi Willig was very, very, very careful. He didn't like hockey with, you know, why? So I think it's because the hockey that they played in Washington Heights and the MTA team, that was Mamash Sakanas Nefashis, right? Because the hockey coach used to tell those guys, you know, he was one of the Rebbeim in the yeshiva. And he used to tell the guys, right? He's not the square Rebbe, but he's very involved. He's a square. He's not a square, except maybe in size, right? But he used to tell the guys, fight! And he would scream at them. And he had the hardest group of guys in MTA, right? And you could hear him three blocks away during hockey practice screaming at the guys, fight! Your coach told us, he said he used to run these guys around until they Until they, that's right, that's exactly right, and until they bled. So Ramosha felt that if there's a tzorach, right, a guy's a professional, but if you're Julian Edelman and you can make a living, you're allowed to play football. Rabbi Willick says, and if you're playing in camp and you're playing tackle with no pads, right, you're not allowed to play, right? So he felt that, that's the difference. Today, the rules are a little different. Then, you know, just parenthetically, the No de Behuda also brings down that it mentions your when you do things that are dangerous by definition, maskirin avonoso shel adam. These are things that mention a person's sins. So why call problems to yourself? Why get yourself into the situation? So ironically, the No de Behuda comes out that a person should not go recreationally hunting, right? And the men's club shouldn't have the trip, but not for the reasons that you might suspect. Not because of tzar bali chaim, and not because of bal tashris. And not because Jews don't hunt, right? Certain people can't jump, but Jews don't hunt, right? You don't have that argument because nobody really hunts anymore. No, the issues are if it's something that brings out a bad teva, or it's about putting yourself in a sakana in a dangerous way without a reason for it, or it's something that's maskirin avonoso shalavim, that a person is bringing about a situation where he's going to mention his sins. So that is something we try to hold back. So to summarize, we use Mordechai as an example, but then we pointed out Mordechai did not give a hechsher to the party. And we discussed the differences between what a hechsher means, and a hechsher is an acceptance of the fact that I'm saying you can come, versus somebody saying, once you're here, I got to take the protection. And we talked about the difference between a chatas hayachid and a chatas hatzibur. We talked about the importance of a hechsher commercially, that there's an additional level that comes when a person reaches out beyond himself. And we have a responsibility as a community to stand up and help people keep the mitzvos, even the mitzvos in terms of lifnei ivel ositein mishal. We buy it commercially only from places that have a hechsher. And then finally, as far as the hunting is concerned, teva ra is something we try to stay away from in conduct that is unbecoming. Okay, we'll stop here. Be'ezus Hashem, we will continue.